Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
This team went from maybe they'll make the playoffs, probably they'll make the playoffs, to being Super Bowl potential caliber.
I'm at your neck.
If there were any questions about Cam Newton, he answered them all this weekend.
Dale Arnold.
Always good to have trust from my quarterback.
The energy that he brings always uplifts everyone.
If I hit certain incentives, I will be able to dress all the coaches, including Bill Belichick.
Oh, I told myself I would never love again.
Rich Keefe.
This result didn't really matter to me. It was more about, like, what are we going to show ourselves to be?
Dale and Keefe with Fitzy.
Offense, transform, and roll out.
On the WEEI Sports Radio Network.
Hour number three, Dale and Keefe, Sports Radio WEEI. Nick Fitzy Stevens is in the house with us, as he is every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And you heard some of the cuts in there. Cam Newton talking yesterday. By the way, the bummer for me was that after he told Greg Hill that, you know, he's playing as well as he is because he gets the right to dress the Patriots coaches, he then said he was kidding. But I almost wondered if today's Bill Belichick outfit was because Cam Newton got to pick what he got to wear today. Wouldn't that be the best?
He did go the other way there. He went with the holes in the shirt. Do you think, though, if the Patriots win the Super Bowl, that Belichick would wear one of Cam's hats?
1,000%.
He'd do that?
1,000%. Yeah. The same way, remember the first time they won the Super Bowl, Ty Law awkwardly got Belichick to dance at the City Hall parade.
Yeah.
And he was so angry that he made him dance. Yeah. He just like pounded his hands on his side and just like did the worst old grumpy uncle wedding dance of all time.
That was a long time ago. That's not going to happen though. But I could see if they win the whole thing, I could see him, you know, putting on the hat.
Belichick,
scarf.
He has rocked a nice hat before too, Rich. I believe he has a hat that's special to him that it was his father's. That he wears.
Oh, okay.
That's kind of like a bowler, I want to say, that's got a little bit of a feather in it that he's worn a couple times, maybe to the Super Bowl or something.
Oh, yeah.
So he can rock a good hat.
He can play with that. Put a little flair in it or something. It'd be good.
I was thinking about Cam's outfits, and Greg talked to him a little bit about the outfits, and we won't focus on that, but I was thinking his shoes probably cost more than all of my clothes in my closet do, right?
Sure. Yeah, I don't think it's cheap, the stuff that he's wearing. You know?
What did he say the shoes were?
Alexander
McQueen.
I'd never heard of
something. Ooh, Dale, those are expensive.
I assumed they were.
How do you know that?
He had them at the tip of the hour.
How do you not know that?
You're thinking of Steve McQueen, the original badass.
No, he's thinking. Gotcha. No, actually.
You're thinking of Lightning McQueen.
John.
You know what, actually? Can you with your head? Just do 20 push-ups right now.
Yeah. He can't do 20 push-ups.
You can't do a push-up. You see why I do them on his knees.
You are thinking, how can you not do a push-up? For God's sakes, how much work do we have to do here? You're thinking of Steve
McQueen.
We're going
to literally build him up. We're going to literally build him up.
You're thinking of Steve.
With his spindly arms.
You're thinking of Steve McQueen.
Oh, you don't like people talking over you?
He stinks. I told you.
We should go in there and break him like driftwood.
Yeah, it'd be no problem.
Just like kindling in a karate pad. You're thinking of Steve McQueen, the filmmaker, Shine. That's who you were name checking. That would be correct. However, yes, those are not his shoes.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, great. Scene on the shoes. Good job.
Do a quick little Google search there, Shine. Do something useful. Give me a price on some Alexander McQueens.
Wow. I believe, to paraphrase Dale, Shine, he just told you to suck on it.
So I do have the number, Dale, if you want it.
Is that what we call shots fired?
Yeah. So the first.
Carry on.
First pair of shoes that popped up is a women's suede and leather platform sneaker.
I'd probably rather go to a men's shoe. I'm just giving you a price range here.
Could you do me a favor, guys? Any other one? Could you look this up?
This is size 8, Keith.
I'm not going to get it done.
$540.
That's less than I expected, actually.
Not bad.
$540 though for a pair of shoes is a lot. Well, actually, no, like really good sneakers, like first release, like limited edition,
like
go for
Jordans
three,
are
yeah,
like
hundreds and hundreds. Yeah.
For the men's, it looks like the highest I see is $690.
I can get a pair of Starbearers, $15.
They'll blow up before you can tie them. But
$15 though, I'm out the door.
They're cheap.
I got something on my
good.
Feet.
Yeah. Good luck making a cut at the basket with those babies on your feet.
That would have been kind of nice, though. Imagine if he did actually have that clause that if they make it to the playoffs, he gets to dress them all for a
dress
day.
Them.
I want to see the miserable look on Steve Belichick's face when he has to walk in like he just came from a zoot suit riot.
It'd look good.
All right, let's go back to Cam for just a moment, who appeared yesterday on the Greg Hill Show, as he does usually every Monday. Came on Tuesday this week because of the travel schedule. And he said something that jumped out at us. He said a couple of things that jumped out at us when we replayed it yesterday. But one about whether or not this team needs wide receiving help was something that really caught our attention.
Man, I'll say this. The answers are in that locker room. You know, we got Lil Bud, Doughboy, Highway 11, you know, my germs. So we good to go. And let me rewind that. We have Jahmyr Bird, N'Keal Harry, Dewan Edelman, and Jacoby Myers.
Now, it doesn't mean they shouldn't add somebody
but he's got confidence in those guys.
Yeah, because he's not going to sit around and wait till the trade deadline either, because then what if you don't get somebody? Or what if you do get somebody and he turns out to be Mohamed Sanu? You got to figure out what you can do with the group that you have. And I think he means it, and I think he's proving that he means it by targeting N'Keal Harry 12 times in game two.
And I think that's it. Strike early. Don't wait, like you said, don't wait till the trade deadline. Don't wait till other teams decide, hey, we're in it. We need a player. Get out there now and get him early. I think that's why I put my piece on EEI.com this week. I dedicated half of it, by the way, to defensive people just on your behalf.
Did you?
I did.
You're coming around on that a little bit.
I did. I came around on that a little bit, too.
Some defensive help.
I think there is some valid concern on that side of the ball. But you tell me, Dale, that this offense wouldn't be, I'll stop short of saying unstoppable, but for your MVP candidate, Cam Newton.
It's way too much.
Would you not say that Zach Ertz or Marvin Jones would open that field up and make them not unstoppable?
I don't like Marvin Jones as much as you, but yeah, somebody else.
Do you know you can get him because he's coming out of, he's begging to be traded from Detroit.
He's available.
He wants out of there.
Doesn't everybody want out of Detroit?
Yes, I would imagine so.
So N'Keal Harry, he did one of the Zoom conferences yesterday, was told about the comments that Cam Newton had made that we just played for you, and let's just say N'Keal Harry appreciated them.
Oh, it's good to have trust from our quarterback. At the end of the day, as receivers, we just want to make him as comfortable as possible, and when he drops back, he has faith in every single one of us that he could trust us to come down with the ball. It's really encouraging.
Yeah, it has to be really encouraging. And it's no mistake what Cam's doing when he's talking about N'Keal Harry has a fumble. So he's asked about the fumble after week one. And he spins it into, you know what, he had a good game. Mm-hmm. He actually had a good game. Well, he really didn't, but he said he had a good game. And then he also proves it, like I said, by actually throwing him the ball. Because it's one thing to kind of pay lip service, but then...
And then never go near him again.
Or like, you know, crunch time, only throw to Edelman. Well, that wasn't the case. Look at how they got the ball down to the 1 yard line. You know, who was that?
Right.
So he is willing to go to N'Keal Harry in big spots. And by doing that in the first couple weeks of the season, you can only imagine how much more comfortable they're going to be by the end of the season and then hopefully into the playoffs because you're building on it immediately.
And Dale, my big concern with N'Keal Harry is that he find a way to really get his legs, like he's starting to be able to catch the ball. He's getting many more targets. The confidence is developed in that big brother relationship between Cam Newton and N'Keal Harry. I want to see him get his legs under him, start driving through guys and not go down at the initial point of reception or contact because we've seen him get knocked over.
Game one especially.
Yeah, but game two, when he catches that ball with a couple seconds left, if the comp to him is an Anquan Boldin or if it's even a David Givens type, and he catches that ball there, you know you're at the two. It's great you made the reception. You did put your team in position to score on the final play, and unfortunately they didn't. But if he can get his legs under him there and drive forward for a couple other yards and really fulfill his size and his promise, that is going to make him a force on the football
field. I almost think what happened the week before was in his head. You know, he was trying to get that extra yard the week before and fumbled it through the end zone. Can you imagine if he'd done it 2 weeks in a row?
Yeah, he's got to now worry about ball security more than most might. Don't you think? I mean,
well, don't you think, Fitzy?
No, you're right. That could very well have been in his head.
But also, to Fitzy's point, to DK Metcalf, obviously the guy we point to because he was drafted a round after him, and we saw him.
He makes it in the end zone.
Probably.
Yeah, he's a berserker.
Because it's one thing when you're like, oh, well, he's obviously even a little bit more ripped than Harry. But Harry looks like the prototypical wide receiver right now. In 2020, like big, strong, fast receivers, you should be able to, especially when it's some of the smaller corners, even some of the smaller safeties, kind of abuse them or at least not go down immediately. And that's kind of a concern with Harry. You might look the part, but when you go down so quick, what's the benefit of being that big?
I'm not asking him to blow him up, Dale, the same way that Chase Winovich basically ended Carlos Hyde's career.
Do we Hyde? Is he doing all right?
On it. Like, but at the same time, like, good stiff arm or maybe like catch it, you know, shed the block or try to drag the guy in the end zone. We're not all going to be able to be Gronk and take three guys with us to the party every time we want to. But at the same time, when he finds a way to add that to his game, he's going to be a real threat for Cam Newton.
So the other cut that we want to play for you, well, for two reasons. One is it's Little Bud, and you know, we like to hear from Demir Byrd, who also appreciated the confidence that Cam has in the young wide receivers. But the primary reason we want to hear it is just because, as Shyam says, it's got a slapping backbeat.
His confidence is just contagious. The energy that he brings always uplifts everyone. I think naturally anybody, if you're having an off day or a hard day, if you surround yourself with people who are positive and upbeat, then your mood will change. And I think that's just exactly what he does every day, day in and day out, whether it's a game day or practice. And that's what really kind of draws people together and want to succeed and also want to see him succeed.
I mean, obviously his energy, his confidence is infectious, and you just hope that it's able to continue. You know, I think it was easy to do it after week one. It was even in a loss pretty easy to do it after week two. But isn't that one thing when you think big picture with this team is they do all follow Cam Newton.
Mm-hmm.
Like the way he's going is the way the team's going to go.
Even pre-training camp when they'd have the pictures of the workouts and they're all standing there arm in arm and arms around each other's shoulders.
Oh, yeah, and they all talk about the energy. They all talk about everything about it, and they love him and the confidence that goes, you know, back and forth. I do wonder, though, say you get blown out by the Raiders and Cam's like, you know, pissed off as you would be.
I'll wear a corn shirt to the studio before that happens.
I'm just saying, like, when things are flying high, it's great, and it's going to be great, and everybody's going to be happy, and like, oh, look at this team, and they're going to be, you know, maybe better than expectations. But I wonder, because every single guy we have heard from talks about just how, like, they just follow Cam, and the way Cam goes, the way he goes, and, like, big personality, always smiling, always having a great time. All right, well, what if he doesn't?
So you're not wanting or wishing there to be adversity for
Of
for
course not, but how can you
you
want to
know
be
how they would respond to
yeah,
it.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I'll ask this. Tough road loss, like gut punch of a road loss.
Yep.
One of your teammates finds out before the game that they lose a family member and the other one's in critical condition. These are trying times. I won't necessarily say like they've lost two and they could potentially punt on a playoff spot, but that was a pretty tough. Those were pretty tough circumstances to go
Cam,
on the road, and he hung in there.
No, he did, but he also had 450 yards of offense and three touchdowns. So it was a
by
loss
by himself.
But, yes. Oh yeah, he's a one man wrecking machine,
which is why he's an MVP candidate.
Oh, here
he
goes.
Is not. He
so,
is not. He must.
Well, have, okay, Dale. What player in the NFL right now? You take the quarterback off that team. What other team loses more? Because if you're going to tell me. If you go from
let's see, the Seattle Seahawks, the Dallas Cowboys, the Arizona Cardinals,
they would all be worse.
Seattle.
I would say honestly, the Baltimore
they'd
Ravens.
They'd all be cooked.
No, they have RG3. Brian Hoyer.
RG3 is your
compared to Brian Hoyer.
RG3 to Lamar Jackson.
No, you knucklehead.
RG3 is not going to get
no,
it done.
No, I'm not.
What
comparing.
Year is this?
Guys,
what year is this?
This is 2020.
I know I feel like we've been trapped
in
a time loop, but I believe it's
most
still 2020.
This is not a Ryan Johnson film. Okay. The most precipitous drop-off from starting quarterback to backup in the NFL right now would absolutely be Cam Newton to Brian Hoyer.
That's not even close to true.
Who?
It's Lamar Jackson to RG3, and it's not even close.
I would love for Madden to run that sim 5,000 times and tell me that I'm correct, because that's exactly what would happen. You think Brian Hoyer would have kept them in it to the end Sunday? The score.
How about the drop off from Russell Wilson to anybody?
Geno Smith.
His supporting cast is more talented than the Patriots, Dale.
What about
Geno Smith can't throw the ball 5 yards in front of him without hitting a defender in the face.
Tom Brady to Blaine Gabbert?
Okay, oh, there's a good one,
that's
too.
That's right.
Matt Ryan to Matt Schaub.
Schaub played great last year.
Schaub sucks.
Stop.
Schaub balled out.
Kyler Murray to whoever his backup is.
Yeah, I don't even know who the backup is in Arizona. It doesn't matter.
It is.
It's actually Cliff Kingsbury.
Brett Hundley.
Ugh.
Yuck.
That's rough. Right. Okay, that.
So let's just take that argument.
But Brian Hoyer, you got to be kidding me. You guys don't see this.
It's not the biggest precipitate. It's not the most precipitous drop off.
RG3 could operate that. Brian Hoyer's not going to like run the read option.
Is that even?
This isn't the San Francisco offense.
Is it the definite? Do you win MVP because your backup sucks?
Brian Hoyer.
Like, is that the answer? Like, oh, our team did such a bad job at getting a decent backup quarterback that you're obviously the MVP because
no.
I think if every starter goes down, you're probably screwed. Okay, every starting quarterback, I should say.
Of course. Well, usually you are.
Sometimes
you have a wagon of a team. You put in a kid who hasn't thrown a ball since high school, you end up 11-5 and somehow don't make the playoffs.
How many Super Bowls have there been? How many backup quarterbacks have won?
A couple.
One.
Hostetler. Nick Foles.
Hostetler. Jeff Hostetler. So every 20 years.
Don't doubt that stash. Don't you doubt that
stash.
Nah,
he was great.
Hostetler. Then he went somewhere else, got paid, and didn't do a damn thing.
He won a Super Bowl, and then he took a bunch of babes into the backseat of his van and made sweet love to them.
I feel like the @Super70 Sport account really just wants to meet Hostetler.
He somehow was able to make love in jeans. He never took his jeans off. He has 30 kids.
Should have been a reliever
area
in the 70s.
617-779-7937. Sorge is in Mansfield. Hey, Sorge.
What's going on, guys?
How's it going?
How you doing?
The thing that I'm most impressed with is Cam's maturity and level of growth. I mean, you look at some of his post-game interviews like 4 or 5 years ago, of course, most notably after that Super Bowl loss. His maturity and level of growth, sometimes when he's, in interviews on the Greg Hill show, I mean, I can't even recognize who's talking. I feel like almost Belichick, when he brings someone in, he takes them into a lab, kind of does a little brainwash, and just kind of, brings them into the Patriot way. But my question to you guys is, do you think there are any teams right now regretting not signing Cam? Obviously,
we lost your phone, Sorger, but yes, the answer would be yes on that. I think the Chargers have to be wondering what they did. Even though the Bears are off to a 2-0 start, don't they have to be wondering, like, Cam Newton was available and for nothing? Like, shouldn't we have brought him in here? He's better than Trubisky. He's better than Foles. And you have some talent around you. I know a lot of people bring up Jacksonville, but I would say no to them because they are trying to either get Trevor Lawrence or find out if Minshew is their guy. And so, actually, Minshew's looked pretty good early on, but you know what? You still might end up with a top pick.
You could.
There's three guys that are projected to be probably top 10 picks in the draft. So some of those teams are angling for those guys. But if you have pretty good talent around you like the Chargers do or like the Bears do, yeah, you got to be wondering, like, what the hell? Why didn't we sign Cam Newton?
Or the Broncos?
Mm-hmm. No, yeah, we're both in on Drew Lock.
Second round pick from a year ago, and then they won every game, I think, that he started last year. So,
and now he's hurt, and you could have used Cam.
Played garbage defenses in all those games.
How can you predict injury?
And that offense is loaded, and they were set to go off. And then next thing you know, he gets his shoulder hurt. Yeah. They lose Cortland Sutton with an ACL. First he had a shoulder, then he has the ACL. That's just bad luck. And then Von Miller, and that team has fallen apart. You tell me right now that the Chargers have some decent weapons, a great running back, and a solid defense. Wouldn't be better off if they had Cam Newton?
100%. And they could still take Herbert.
It'd be the king of LA.
Instead of T-Mobile, you start Cam Newton for as long as that lasts, and maybe it's a whole season, and then you're in a better spot. You're a playoff team.
And to Sorge's point about the maturity level of Cam, and we've liked everything he said around here, for crying out loud. It doesn't seem like he's put a bad word foot forward since he's arrived. But the comments that he made about the wide receivers and the maturity level, let's compare and contrast that with an older, wiser quarterback who also played here for quite some time when Tom Brady appeared with Howard Stern earlier in the winter.
I would say, I don't have any trust that this guy can, help us, win the game. I mean, I can definitely express my opinion to say, if you put him out there, I'm not going to throw him the ball. You know, the whole team is trusting me to do what's right by the team. So you can't put someone out there that I don't believe in, because if I don't believe in them, then it's worthless for the team.
That's why the old motto of Tom Brady's favorite receiver is the open receiver. That died in 07.
Mm-hmm.
From 01 to 06, it was true. It could be David Patton. It could be Deion Branch. It could be Troy Brown. It could be Jermaine Wiggins. Fourier. It didn't matter. It was. And that was true. But think about how much...
Then he got a little picky about who he wanted to throw
to. Well, and you could kind of understand why also, because you have Randy Moss and Wes Welker, and then you later got Julian Edelman and Rob Gronkowski. You know what? I don't have a problem with you kind of forcing it in there, and you had a lot of success doing it that way. But how damning is that for a quarterback to say, yeah, if I'm not going to throw to him. Like, you can put him out there, but I'm not going to throw to him. Like, all right, so what if he happened to be the open guy? Like, what if everything dialed up right and there was, like, a blown coverage and there's N'Keal Harry standing in the back of the end zone and you're going to, what, throw into triple coverage on Edelman? Like, that's not how you do it.
No.
So, yeah, that was pretty bad, and I think Cam Newton is coming at it from a completely different stance. And maybe part of it is he's had a handful of talented players in 9 years, but he never had Randy Moss. He never had Rob Gronkowski. So... Cam's used to working with less.
Yes, he is. But what does he, what do we know he loves? Loves checking down to the backs. Obviously, last week in a game where they could have used him, unfortunately, due to circumstances beyond everyone's control, he didn't have his best pass-catching back. Loves throwing to the tight end. So far, he's got two rookie tight ends and a second-year guy.
Yeah.
So that's why I would
He likes chucking it deep, too. Like, you go back to his earlier in his career, his MVP season, Ted Ginn.
He's got a cannon.
What, Ted Ginn have 10 touchdowns? And you know there were all those, like, just... sprint outs, bombs, like 100,
like Culpepper to Moss style.
Right, there's like 80 yards down the field.
That's why maybe I would then move the tight end over wide receiver in terms of shopping list, were I to consider making an earlier acquisition for the Patriots. Yeah. If we're not going to go defense, which, you know, what do you think Tom Curran will say?
We could ask Tom Curran.
At 1 o'clock.
But I think...
That's a professional radio team.
Thank you. At the beginning, BMT right there.
At the beginning of
tees.
The year, don't you think that the wide receiver group might have been the worst group going into the year? But it's clearly tight end and then linebacker to me. Tight end and linebacker are much, much worse than receivers. And again, Edelman needs to stay healthy and blah, 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 all that stuff.
It's a big if.
It is a big if. But right now, I have more faith in them also because of Cam's willingness to throw to them. Harry, Bird, Edelman, and then if you want Myers, fine. Way better than the two rookie tight ends. One can't even get on the field. And then Ryan Izzo. And then who are your linebackers? Slow-ass Juwan Bentley and 3-4 other guys that like are in and out?
No Uche yet to be spoken of.
Anthony
Jennings seems to be kind of playing. Like,
I haven't noticed him.
Nope. Hasn't gone off yet either. No. So maybe that's as much a position of need as tight end as well.
Yeah.
We did get an update, by the way. We told you about this about a half an hour or so ago. The Adam Schefter report that the Chargers team doctor accidentally punctured Tyrod Taylor's lung just before kickoff Sunday while trying to administer a pain-killing injection.
He's just been arrested for assault and battery.
Well, he might be. That might be coming up next because Schefter has followed that up, said, doctors have advised Tyrod Taylor not to play indefinitely due to his punctured lung. The Chargers were hoping he'd be able to start Sunday. Doctors are against it. And that brings up George Atala, who is the Players Association Executive Director of External Affairs, who tweeted out, our medical and legal team have been in touch with Tyrod and his agent since Sunday collecting facts. An investigation has been initiated.
So we're also going to find out if Anthony Lynn is a man of his word and works out Colin Kaepernick. Because
and
if Tyrod Taylor
will be, he won't.
He won't. But if Tyrod Taylor's out indefinitely, you now have the rookie Justin Herbert and something called Easton Stick on the roster.
Is that a baseball bat?
Easton Stick. No. You don't know that? If you actually get, you know, like the pitching coach who's always doing the infomercials, if you buy his machine right now, you get a free supply of Easton Stick.
Is that like a Funko?
Tommy Mansky throws in an Easton Stick. Not bad.
I tried so hard to throw baseballs from center field into a garbage can. Based on some of the videos.
It's very helpful. If you can do that, you can do anything.
617-779-7937 is the telephone number. We will talk with Tommy Curran coming up at the top of the hour. We will talk about the Boston Celtics when we come back in just a couple of minutes. It's Dale and Keefe with Fitzy, and it's time to trend.
Fitzy joins Dale and Keefe every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday on WEEI.
It wasn't as smooth a process as you might have thought. I'm told that on at least two separate occasions, the Patriots floated his name in trade talks, both before the draft and during training camp. I think one thing to remember here, too, is the context of where the Patriots were for most of the offseason. They have the second most cap space in the league right now, guys, but that's new. That's a result of all the opt-outs. There was a point where they had less than $1 million underneath the salary cap. Stephon Gilmore was one of the few people that they could go to that could make a significant difference there, and I can tell you this, like, he wasn't going to renegotiate his contract without some sort of raise.
That's Bert Breer, who, although in the cut that we played, wasn't necessarily clear about who he was talking about. He was talking about the possibility of the Patriots exploring trading Stephon Gilmore, who, look, we talked about this a little bit with Andy Hart yesterday. Three of his last four games, Stephon Gilmore has been pretty pedestrian, hasn't he?
Yeah, he has. Now, that also came out around the time that Gilmore signed the new deal, or just got some new money into this season. And so that came out, and I feel like it didn't really get as much attention as it maybe should have. It was almost like when we found out that the Patriots were going to trade Rob Gronkowski, and then they didn't, and then everybody just kind of moved on. But you're like, well, wait a minute, what? They were going to trade Gronk?
Mm-hmm.
And he basically said no to it. And so this was, they at least explored. Now, that could mean all kinds of different things. But the fact that you have the reigning defensive player of the year at a position which is just super important, and you were talking about trading him? Now, I also wonder what the timeline kind of was for that. Because if you told me that they considered trading him before they signed Cam Newton, I'd say, maybe a good team decision. Because you weren't going to win anything with Jarrett Stidham.
Nope.
So, but then
maybe with Brian Hoyer.
True. Yeah.
Yeah, maybe.
But so those guys, yeah, if you have either one of those guys, like, you know what? Maybe this is going to be a bit of a rebuild. But when you bring in Cam Newton at that point, I'm not trading Stephon Gilmore.
But Stephon Gilmore's value will never have been higher, even after the Parker game, than it was with him coming off Defensive Player of the Year. And even though Belichick is loath to continue paying out top-end dollars, I'm sure he still believes he's near the top of the game.
Yes.
But maybe Gilmore isn't as locked down, or just maybe has lost a half of a step, and that's a huge price tag. And like I said, Belichick sometimes can be so cold, so calculating, that he can't help resisting the idea of, like, this commodity is never going to get higher. Well, I know he's still a great player. Maybe I should see if I could get that first and third that someone's offered me.
It's almost always a year too early than a year too late with Bill, right?
Has
when he
be.
Moves on from guys. And I think a lot of people assume that as soon as players leave here, they're not good. That's not true, but they don't necessarily
Chandler
have a long
Chandler
Jones
career. Has still been really good.
Correct. Yeah, Chandler Jones is great. Ty Law led the league in picks the year after he left. Richard Seymour was a Pro Bowler. Logan Mankins was a Pro Bowler. So there are examples. But with Steph Gilmore, it's also a position like he's already 30 years old. And it's a position where even the best corners, you know, Daryl Green being the exception, who played until he was 100 and was always good.
And was always super fast. And Champ Bailey was great, but he evolved in more of a safety.
Yeah, and even like Revis and Deion Sanders, their last Pro Bowl years, I think were like age 31, 32, like somewhere in there. Mm-hmm. So I wonder how much more Gilmore even has left in the tank, even though I know he was great a year ago. But when you saw Russell Wilson and DK Metcalf just say, yeah, we'll win this match. We'll throw it over here.
We'll go right at him
and just have his way with him. You're like, oh, no.
How about the fact that the coaches said they knew going into it that Gilmore would be matched up on him, and they thought it was advantage Seahawks?
That's crazy.
And they DK were confident. Metcalf,
good player, but there's a lot of receivers better than him.
And they were right. It was advantage Seahawks.
They were confident in targeting the supposedly, or rather, one of the best cornerbacks, the guy who's Defensive Player of the Year. Some call him the best cornerback in football. I'm casting no aspersions toward the man or his career. But the Seahawks said, let's throw at Gilmore. They were right. Yeah. They won the matchup. And here's the thing. If you look at the film, yes, Gilmore got back in position to swat at the ball so that at the end it looked good. But for a few steps, Metcalf had him smoked.
Yeah,
and the ball hung up there for a while, so it's sort of like
and
the
you look
two
at
came back.
Two of the guys that have really stood out that have given him trouble are DeVante Parker and DK Metcalf.
Big guys.
And guess what? A lot of teams have big receivers.
Yeah.
A lot of teams do. So it's not like, you don't really face Julio Jones, so you don't have to worry about Julio Jones. Like, a lot of these teams seem to have pretty big receivers, and it's one of those things where, all right, well, maybe the book starts to get out on him a little bit. And now maybe the Patriots have to do things a little bit differently. They have to choose who Gilmore goes up against or when he gets help and when he doesn't.
And I'm going to Dale.
Just based on this discussion, based on what you heard Bert Breer say, based on what you've seen so far, would it shock you if at or before the NFL trade deadline, Bill Belichick wheels Stephon Gilmore out of here?
It would now, because I don't believe his value is as high because of the fact that he was okay week one, but still had two DPIs.
It would surprise me now because you are in a position. Well, I'm assuming that at the deadline they're like 4-2 or whatever they like. Mm-hmm. I think they're going to be pretty good. So obviously, if it's the other way, then I wouldn't rule anything out. But if they're a good team and
on track to win the division, I think they keep him. Because it's not like they tacked an extra year onto his deal. They just gave him more money for
this
year.
They just borrowed money from next year and stuck it on this year's contract.
That's what convinces me that this will be his last year in Foxborough.
So you might be right about that.
Yeah.
And as Burt Breer said, too, in the cut, you know, when they considered trading him, they had no cap space. Whereas now, and we always say, hey, you can create cap space. And so they have. And so now it's not as pressing. Like, they can still go out there and acquire a tight end or a linebacker and pay Gilmore. Like, they can do all of that for this year still.
Now, you've seen him give up. He's right now, so far in the season, he's 8 for 12. So he's given up 67% catch, a couple touchdowns, and the one touchdown, couple pass interferences. So he hasn't exactly had, like you said, Dale, a sterling season so far. Do you run the risk of perhaps Gilmore having another bad game or two before the trade deadline and then seeing his value diminish? Would you pull the trigger on it now? I don't think that they would.
See, I think
they should have done it in the
offseason.
I think they should have done it in the offseason and been confident. Because look how many guys they've also brought in, Rich. They keep, like, Michael Jackson and Miles Brown.
Do you think they still have
tons of cornerbacks. They don't need to keep trotting him in. I think he's looking for somebody who he thinks can do 75% of Gilmore's work at 5,000%.
Do you think Gilmore's still a top?
Don't they already have him, by the way?
Who, J.C. Jackson?
Yeah.
And they have... And they also have Joan Williams.
Isn't J.C. Jackson, what you just described, can do 75% of what Stephon Gilmore can do and cost a crap ton less?
Wait, let's just clear this up.
No, he can do more, actually, Dan.
Where does everybody stand on Gilmore? Is he still a top five corner?
Yes.
Or no? I think he is. I'm not ready. I'm not giving up on him yet.
Top five corner? I thought Tre'Davious White was better. I'll stick with that.
Okay,
you might be right. That's fine. So he's still a top three.
I think he's still...
Top five, yeah.
I think he's still very valuable. Now, I have my doubts about next year and certainly the year after that, but all we're talking about is for this year. Mm-hmm. I keep him. I also think he, this week, is set up to have a really good game, unless they put him on Darren Waller, which I think would be a mistake.
That'd be a big mistake.
You put him on any of the receivers, they have bad receivers in Vegas, so maybe he gets the confidence back a little bit.
Right. If we're
he shuts down whoever they put him on.
If we are in here Monday, Rich, and we're talking about Ruggs or Renfro owning Gilmore
or Nelson Agholor.
Stop it.
That's what I'm saying.
That would be a disaster.
How the money have fallen at
that would
point.
Be a disaster.
But Rich, let's say you're right and they say we're not putting him on Waller. We're not doing that. Okay. And I'm even half buying what you're saying. Who do you put on Waller?
You don't have a linebacker
who's got a prayer.
Joan. I put Joan Williams on him. He's the one guy on the team you need to double.
First of all, 100%. You don't put one guy on Darren Waller.
You put
the whole team on
him.
I have Kyle Duggar come in and just smack him.
Duggar. Duggar game.
It could be.
I don't see why not. Like, Duggar and Williams are big guys. I would consider them.
Did you see the footage of Duggar on the blitz and also in run stuffing on Sunday?
He's a physical individual.
He's very physical.
Yeah. He just absolutely demolished an offensive lineman on that.
I'll tell you what. If it's
someone who weighed 100 pounds more and he knocked him over.
We were all in awe of Chase Winovich tossing a running back.
Yeah, that was great.
Whereas Kyle Duggar literally tossed an offensive lineman.
I'll tell you what. If they put Juwan Bentley on him, he will have 12 catches for 150 yards and 2 touchdowns.
In the first quarter. In the first quarter, I say I'd say the safety over top, especially maybe because Juwan's the hybrid. Maybe
it's the
because
one guy. I mean, obviously Henry Ruggs is off to a slow start. He's the one guy that can get you on like the 60-yard bomb. You gotta defend that too. But it's all about Waller,
100%. And also, you know, they don't love throwing the deep ball either, too. Like, that's not Derek Carr's game. Mm-hmm. It's funny that we were, you know, making fun of Drew Brees for, you know, checking down and not doing more than 10 yards. I didn't see a lot of passes longer than 10, 12 yards from Carr on Monday.
Yeah.
That's his game. Right. That's his game. And if you play to the strengths of the Patriots secondary, it's going to be making sure that all those passes are 20 yards and in.
Right.
It's the deep balls they've actually been struggling with for, I would say, you know, mid-boogeymen last year all the way up to last week.
Celts and Heat, game 4 tonight. We'll talk about that coming up next. Tommy Curran joins us at the top of the hour. It's Dale and Keefe with Fitzy, Sports Radio WEEI.
More of Dale and Keefe with Fitzy on WEEI.
It seems as though the Celtics and Heat haven't played for a week. It's only been 4 days, but it seems like it took forever. They've had pool parties. You know, you had Marcus Smart and Enes Kanter trying to see who could get the other guy in the pool. It's finally time to get back to basketball, real basketball tonight. And based on the Game 3 win by the Celtics, are you guys feeling as much better about this as I am?
Uh, meh,
him?
No,
by the way,
you're
you sound,
not.
No, not as, maybe not as.
Oh, I feel much better about the series than I
okay.
do.
Okay. I don't feel like it's completely over, I should say. And the big reason why is Gordon Hayward played 31 minutes, looked pretty good, and had 3 days off and now comes back. So I'm expecting at least as good a performance out of Gordon Hayward, which could be the big swing in this whole series. Now, at the same time, I don't have a lot of confidence in the Celtics in a close game late. And like, because they didn't have to prove that in game three. So if they win game four, I almost feel like it's going to have to be a similar formula where they get a big lead and then you're kind of just like holding on to it and then close out the game that way rather than tie game 2 minutes to go, and you're going back and forth between Tatum and Butler and Dragic. At that point, I would not have a lot of confidence.
I don't feel good about it, Dale.
Oh, God.
I feel great.
Oh, there he is. He's back.
I feel
Optimist Prime.
Great.
All right, well, why do you feel great? You can play the music? Is that why you feel great?
That's your little brother who's begging for attention in the other room. He's the one like...
I'm not going to give it to him.
Anderson, literally at this point now, you're the older brother.
Yes.
He's like he's the oops child that your parents had.
Yes.
And he's like pouring oatmeal over his head like,
ridiculous.
Look, isn't this funny? Look, when I do this...
I won't even know.
Come on, older brother, look at me. I'm pouring oatmeal on my head.
Not going to
I just want my older brother's affection. That's all I want for.
You'll never get it. That
never
I can promise you.
Happen. No.
I've never been more sure of anything in my life.
And dad's calling us from the road, a.k.a. his basement.
So why?
I feel better about this, Rich. I feel better about this, Dale, because last week I told you, I think if they could just get the game three win, however they get it, and they got it, granted it got a little tight at the end, but they still won by 11. It was convincing in that they shot better, they made smart decisions, they actually busted the zone a little bit, they moved the ball, they were more aggressive, they got the ball in the hands. Much more aggressive, and they have the 4 days off. The 4 days off allowed two things I thought that were crucial. One, like you said, four more days for Gordon Hayward to still not be 100%, but feel better, practice with the team, get back into his groove, and two, forget the past. It is a four-game series. You have to win three, and if you win tonight...
They did fight after game two, so that's still in there somewhere.
But that's great.
I thought it was good.
It was great.
It turns out it ended up being good.
Yes, it did so far.
Yeah,
and
if
they win tonight...
Because there was no adversity in game
but
three.
But for a night.
Yes.
But for one more night, it could be good for the team.
Do you think the
win
Heat
tonight,
will shoot as poorly as they did?
They'll shoot better, but it would be crazy to think that the Heat are going to come out and shoot 60% tonight.
For three straight games now, I keep telling you guys, well, Jimmy Butler's going to be Jimmy Butler, and he hasn't been yet.
No, he hasn't.
As it needed to be.
But the first two games, that's the thing, is I'm with you in the criticism of him in game three. Because, all right, you're the superstar, you got to kind of snap out of it, and he never did. Whereas games one and two, he didn't need to score 25 points. Like, he was deferring to other guys, they were making their shots. And the Celtics, what's frustrating is, even though they didn't play great, they probably could have won the first two games. And they coughed it up. They coughed it up late, and we've seen that even in the Toronto series. Like, when you get close late, I have no confidence, and I don't know why that would change now. Like, is Gordon Hayward going to be the complete difference there, or are they just going to give the ball to Jason Tatum or Kemba Walker and have him pounded into the floor? Like, if that's what it is, doesn't matter who else is playing.
We asked this the other day. Which team gets the greater benefit from the 4 days off? And Rich, I think you and I thought it was the Celtics because it'll help
Hayward. Yeah, yeah.
You know, who's coming off the ankle injury, and it gives him – he admitted he was winded. The conditioning wasn't what he'd like it to be. I think I would expect Hayward to be better today than he was on Saturday.
Yeah, I think so. And he was pretty good. Like, again, the stats don't really show, like, a great performance, but just watching the game and giving him that many minutes so you don't have to give those same minutes and spread them out over the semi-Ojeley, Grant Williams, Brad Wanamaker. You can put in Hayward. So, yeah, I'm good with it. And obviously, Tatum and Brown had great game threes. Mm-hmm. They're going to have to do that again. That's one of the things we've sort of said about Tatum as well. It's like, all right, if you want to be a superstar, top 10 player, it's got to be just about every night. You're allowed one stinker, but it's got to be just about every single night.
Gave him a bench.
Yeah,
I mean, granted, it's not much more of a bench, but,
but
like you said,
like 6-7 guys in the playoffs, I think is fine.
Seven-man rotation is fine, and if one of them is when healthy, a qualified starter and former All-Star like Hayward,
do you think they have any answer at all for Bam Adebayo?
That's the biggest problem.
Not
I still think they might be able to find ways to prevent Hero and to prevent Dragic, even though those guys can kind of basically shoot from behind a wall or with a blindfold and probably get the ball in. Adebayo is the biggest problem.
He's an issue. I feel like with Hero and Duncan Robinson, you need to abuse them when they're playing defense. Mm-hmm. You saw it was the game one where Duncan Robinson got into all the foul trouble because he can't keep up with anybody. So anytime they're not in the zone or even when they are, just go after those guys and then they're going to be in trouble. Bam Adebayo, though, the best thing I can think of is either the Celtics have to throw in maybe a couple of zones of their own so the pick and roll doesn't work as effectively, or there's got to be a little bit more help defense. Because normally it's just like the two guys, they run pick and roll, and then it's lob dunk to Bam.
Yeah, but
lob dunk to Bam.
The problem is if somebody was able to get open in the zone on the outside, or if someone's feeling it, then you've got they're just draining 28-footers all night. Now you break the zone, and then it becomes the Bam show. That's why they've got to stay both aggressive on the offensive side of the court and defensively, like you said, push those guys, make them afraid to get open for that shot.
Yeah.
Don't leave the lower part of the open so they can give it to Bam, who can then kick it out to Harrow or kick it out to Duncan Robinson.
Do you guys expect Jay Crowder to continue to be as hot from deep as he's been so far in this series?
So he cooled off last game, but yeah, the first couple games he was just dropping everything in there. It was funny because watching him in game three, I think all Celtics fans were like, yeah, there's Jay Crowder.
The guy.
I remember Jay Crowder. No, I don't think he will, but I also don't think – I think Goran Dragic will have a monster bounce back game today. And that's been one of the key matchups in the whole series is Dragic versus Kemba Walker. Even if they're not guarding each other on every trip, just who gets more production out of the point guard spot? Going into the series, you were kind of hoping it was going to be Kemba. But then you're like, you know, maybe Goran Dragic seems to be a little bit more of a stone cold killer. Mm-hmm. Now, Dragic was bad, though, in game three. Kemba was much better. Kemba kind of snapped out of it. So if that can continue and if it's a lopsided advantage in favor of the Celtics, then they're winning game four.
And if
just going around the table here, fellas, mm-hmm. I think the Celtics win tonight. Rich, I think you don't think they win tonight.
I don't. And part of it is after winning the first two games for Miami, and then you're looking at it and say, all right, the Celtics now have to take the hottest team in the bubble and beat them 4 out of 5 games. Just did not seem likely. Now, I didn't think they were going to get swept, so they're obviously going to grab a game in there, but I think Jimmy Butler, Goran Dragic, the two of them will be a lot better tonight, and I think, I think the money's on the Heat.
If I could guarantee that Kemba Walker, playing 40 minutes too again, that's a lot on Saturday, shot 50%, both overall and from three.
Yeah.
If I could tell you he does that again and he's good for 20+, how does that make you feel?
That made me feel a lot better. Okay. Yeah, because then I think the matchup is either even between he and Dragic, mm-hmm. or maybe he even has the advantage. And then at that point, yeah.
Right, because then you know if you think Dragic is going to go off tonight, let's say he's good, like ticket him for 25 right now, mm-hmm. and Kemba can get 20+,
then you're
kind of neutralize that.
Yes. Yeah.
Now I'll take my chances.
Yeah. All right, so who do you like, Fitzy?
Celtics winning by three.
Three, so they win a close game.
They finally win the close one.
See, I think
tonight they win the close one.
See, I think if they win, they're going to win by like 13, or they lose. It's either like it's another night where Miami can't shoot. Jimmy Butler, you're questioning them, and the Celtics never have to really have close, tighten. You're biting your fingernails possessions. As long as they can avoid that, then they'll win
tonight. Dale, Miami thinks they have it locked up, and the Celtics come back, squeeze a tight one from them. Brand new best of three. And it's anyone's series.
Anyone's series.
Yeah, baby. Tom E. Curran, NBC Sports Boston.
6 to midnight on that one, Dale.
He'll join us next, coming up here on Dale and Keefe with Fitzy, Sports Radio WEEI.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.